This is the Dr. Peter Breggin Hour, every Wednesday at 4 p.m. on www.prn.fm. This radio presentation replays my weekly TV show, Refounding America with Peter R. Breggin, MD, which can be watched on Brighteon.tv, and it's available on Roku. I interview guests who are heroes and pioneers in confronting the global predators who are behind COVID-19 lockdowns and vaccines, corrupt public health and medicine, global warming, the Great Reset, and other justifications for destroying the Western democracies. They are stealing our countries, our freedoms, our dignity and hope, and our jobs and our savings. For documentation of this worldwide tragedy, read our new book, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey, by Peter and Ginger Breggin. Together, my guests and I explore what is happening and what we each can do to refound America and inspire the world. Thank you for your courage in facing these challenges and standing up for liberty. Here are four principles for living like an American. Protect freedom. Take responsibility at all times. Express gratitude for every gift and opportunity. Become a source of love. Once again, these are the times that try our souls. We must find the strength and the courage to rise up to refound America in the spirit of liberty. Welcome, my wonderful, wonderful audience, to Refounding America and Reclaiming Ourselves. In this 1 minute intro, I'll tell you that Zev Zelenko is our guest today, and he is one of the most important people in the world today, I believe. I am blessed to call him a friend. I want to talk briefly about something I'm going to be talking about a lot in the coming weeks, which is the New World Order's biggest move, which is the World Health Organization working with the European Union closely, is planning to take over the healthcare departments of sovereign nations through treaties. They plan to have this going full steam in 2024. It will be the end of democracy in the world. I'll be telling you more about that today and in the future and writing about it. Well, welcome back again, folks. I'm with Vladimir Zev Zelenko, MD. I've known Zev from early on in the pandemic, like most of my very best friends. I've made them in the last 2 years because COVID-19 has brought out the worst in the world, and then the responses of some of the best people in the world, and among them certainly is Zev Zelenko. Zev is a family physician, board certified in that area, who was devoting his life to serving his community outside of New York City when the COVID hit the city and people were getting sick and no one was treating them and people were dying, especially vulnerable people, physically compromised and old people. And a great deal of terror was falling over the community. And Zev just went to work using his intelligence. He graduated at the top of his class at Hofstra, studying chemistry, no less, not American literature or something that I might have been if I hadn't gone pre-med. And Zev put his mind to work and his physical physician's training, and talked to people around the world about what was happening. And he developed what became the Zelenko Protocol, was published in different versions with different people about how to approach the early successful treatment of COVID-19 using zinc and what he calls zinc ionophores. I learned the term from him, but substances that help zinc enter the cell and attack the virus, such as hydroxychloroquine and other treatments. Later, our mutual friend, Peter McCullough, MD, MPH, joined in the further working on these protocols. And together, these two men have saved, I believe, millions of lives around the world. And if allowed, their work would have stopped the epidemic dead in its tracks, because scientific studies show that working with these substances, including ivermectin, and specifically studies of hydroxychloroquine, prevents 75% of deaths and 85% or more of hospitalizations. These are huge, huge numbers. So I want to welcome Zev. And Zev, you heard my brief introduction that what I'm learning now and studying and beginning to write and talk more about is what I think is the next entering wedge. We have the European Union. We have the nations of Germany and France and Great Britain, led by their globalist leaders. We have several nations around the world, including Indonesia, and they are all working together to help the World Health Organization develop treaties to be put in place by 2024 that would essentially put their country's preparedness and response to pandemics in the hands of the World Health Association. Well, World Health Organization. And this would actually put these nations at any, announcement of an emergency by the World Health Organization, essentially under the control of the World Health Organization, because that's what's been done in the pandemics. The public health people take over. And under, they would be literally operating, Zev, under the constitution of the World Health Organization, which is a part of the United Nations and its charter. So literally a large portion of the constitutions of sovereign nations would be set aside. And it's amazing that they're receiving a great amount of support from most of the nations of Europe and their leaders, all of whom pretty much are in my class of global predators. It's a shocking situation. It's something we must respond to. They've even announced their timeline, which is to have these treaties out there by 2024. We could be surrounded by nations that are essentially a block under the UN and the World Health Organization that include some of the major nations in Europe and the European Union, and then a lot of poor and already fascist and communist nations around the world. But I just wanted to bring that up because it's so much on my mind. If you have any thoughts about that, Zev? And then we'll go on to some interesting stuff that you want to tell us about.
Well, first of all, I don't think you called it the right way. WHO, in my opinion, is the World Homicide
Association. Organization.
And yeah. The World Homicide Organization works in collaboration with the cesspool of iniquity called the United Nations. And they're both subservient to the World Economic Forum, where the Hitler of our times, Klaus Schwab, sits there and gives dictates. And all the European countries that are in support of these tyrannical globalist initiatives are all students of the Klaus Schwab's Global Leadership School. In 1992, I was the first class that graduated, and in that class, the graduates were Bill Gates and Angela Merkel. Other graduates were Justin Trudeau, Ardern, the Prime Minister of New Zealand, Morrison, Macron from France, and all other a bunch of degenerates. And what these people are, they're prostitutes that sell their people out. They don't serve the interests of their own constituents. They are serving the interests of the World Economic Forum and the powers behind the World Economic Forum. And so these are what you call global predators. The stated goal of the World Economic Forum by 2030 is that America will no longer be dominant, and a few global powers, which you can call global predators, will have governance over the world. So what we're seeing is the coming together of global dominance under the control of a small group of sociopaths. So it's not surprising what's happening. And we are letting it happen. And this has been in the works for decades. So but we are on the very, very verge of global enslavement, unless people wake up and reach a higher level of consciousness and choose freedom, choose God over sociopaths and corrupt governments.
I'm really glad you brought up the data about the School for Global Predators as conducted by Klaus Schwab. There's been a lot of breaking news about that. I haven't mentioned it yet here on the air, and I'm so glad that you brought it up. And by the way, we cover a lot of this material and all the background material in our book, Me and Ginger Breggin, COVID-19 and the Global Predators, We Are the Prey. It's on sale in the U.S. You can get it at a discount on our special website for that, which is wearethepray.com. But you can also buy it anywhere in the world, including the U.S., online at Amazon and other places. Zev, I'm proud to say, wrote an amazing introduction to the book. Another introduction is written by that other very great man, Peter A. McCullough, and an amazing woman, Elizabeth Lee Vliet, who is the founder of truthforhealth.org, a very, very good organization that McCullough is involved in, and that Ginger and I are becoming part of their council. The one step to go beyond with understanding these predators is how much Communist China is behind all these people. Bill Gates and Klaus Schwab literally are schmoozers with the Chinese communists. So are a number of the other global predators like Michael Bloomberg. The Chinese virtually control the World Health Organization and the UN. So I think that where this will eventually go to, I'm interested in what Zev has to say about it, is to domination by a communist empire, Chinese Communist Empire, that will be very difficult to dislodge over hundreds or thousands of years. That's the potential end of this game for the time being, as I would see it. Do you see China in that same role that I do?
Well, China, the communist philosophy is based on a godless society. In other words, they replace God with the state. And so they're just a manifestation of the primordial serpent. And that serpent has a lot of heads. And so what we're seeing is kind of the result of a global decline of humanity's consciousness, where we've started worshiping the god of science, the god of technology, the god of money, the god of power, every god except our creator. And so the end result of that is a slippery slope to idol worship and paganism and child sacrifice. So China is a manifestation, or China's dominance is a manifestation of the weakness of the collective human spirit. And as you know, the famous psychoanalyst Carl Jung said, that the moral decline of a society begins with the degradation of the individual. And we can extrapolate it the other way, that the moral improvement of a society begins with the elevation of the individual. And so we as a society have made millions, if not billions, of really bad choices over the last decades, like the indiscriminate murder of the unborn, the desecration of marriage, the desecration of gender roles, the normalization of debauchery. You know, if these degenerates had their way, my four-year-old daughter would share a bathroom with a 30-year-old man who thinks he's a woman. Or some transvestite would be reading books to my six-year-old. These are all things that have happened, by the way. And so the complete desecration of anything that's holy leads to a global society where a country like China, or ideology of China, could have dominance. So I think that we can call out the problems, but the solution has to begin with the individual. Each of us, every time we hear something like this, have to make resolutions to rise in our consciousness, in our holiness, in our raise the level of our behavior, and become more compliant with human decency. And that's very catchy, by the way. And so to start a revolution of good, the world will be redeemed with acts of goodness and kindness. There's plenty of the opposite. So we need to counter the evil with good. And the way that happens is with indiscriminate love.
Well, I really, you know, you and I so clearly see things in a very, very similar fashion. Do you see us as pretty much still on the decline? Or do you see some hope in what the truckers are doing? I'm seeing maybe a potential disaster in Canada as Trudeau gets more violent. I guess he has a week to do what he wants before Parliament has to approve, if I understand this emergency situation. But I think there is more of an awakening in the world in the last few months. Do you think that's happening?
Yes, I do think so. I think that if we were to create a scale of, let's say, awareness or consciousness of reality, when we started 2 years ago, we could say that humanity was in level one. I think right now we're in a solid level four. It's progress.
Four out of what, Zeb? Got to tell me the top line.
Out of 10.
10?
Of awareness of the truth, of the true narrative. And this is the key here. It's a race. The race is between the forces of evil trying to enslave us versus the rate at which humanity wakes up quick enough to prevent that from happening. See, that's the dynamic at play, because regardless of their plans that the forces of evil have very carefully and really brilliantly choreographed and actualized, but they're evil. We have something that they don't, which is the God, which is the God scaler. And I don't really see a natural solution here. I see a need. We're dealing with such a Goliath that to dislodge this Goliath, we need a divinely inspired David. And divine intervention isn't free. It has to be earned. And the way we earn it is, as a society, is repentance and return to the worship of God. of putting our faith and our fears to our Creator, who's making us anew every instant of time. And so it is possible, and I'm seeing it happen, because so many people have been disappointed and their faith has been shaken in the God of governments, science, and the technology, and everything that is a derivative of a putrid drop of semen is man-made organizations and industries and structures, innovations. The worship of those derivatives of that putrid drop has led to this situation. And I'm beginning to see people who were atheists or agnostics really lose faith in those human institutions and are beginning to see that this is a fight of good versus evil, and are beginning to discover their inner spirituality and seek truth. And that is the key here, because when we cross a critical threshold, a critical mass of enough people turning to the Creator and asking Him for divine intervention, that divine intervention will come, and with the God scaler, all these pagans and idol worshippers and child sacrificing demons will be blown away in one instant of time. But we have to earn it, and that's the whole reason why I spent the last 2 years of my life doing these interviews, is to help people reach a higher level of consciousness so that they could turn to the Creator rather than turn to despots, so that they can turn to the truth and run away from the false narrative, so that they won't choose to walk into an execution chamber, so that they won't choose to live in fear and isolation and put a face diaper on, but rather live free and integrate with the people they love, live in a consciousness of serenity and tranquility and faith, because this is exactly what these despots are trying to accomplish. It's a historical fact that whenever tyrannical movements attempt to take over, they marginalize or eliminate religion or houses of worship. And the rationale is quite clear. If I bow down to God, I won't bow down to them. And so there's an active attempt through the use of, let's call it mass psychosis, through the use of fear and isolation to destabilize people psychologically and then entrap them into a false belief or a golden calf of a vaccine or government institutions and corrupt leaders. And so it is imperative on the human race to reject the mandates. And even I'll even say more, it may require the sacrifice of one's life. You know, we had some freedom because our previous generations had the courage to storm the beaches of Normandy and confront fascism and the Japanese and forces of evil. And we were then blessed with a few decades of some freedom. The real question is, will our children be free? And the answer is, well, it depends what we do now. Are we ready to sacrifice? Are you ready to give up your life so that freedom will reign? Well, the answer for me is yes, and I'll tell you why. Because we live a finite existence. Some people live 20 years, some 50, 100 years. But in relation to infinity, it's all equally insignificant. But what is absolutely significant is that during this finite existence, God gives us consciousness. He gives us free choice. And if we use that free choice properly, we can earn a relationship with the eternal and the infinite. So this is just a stepping stone to a greater level of consciousness and awareness and closeness to God. But it's an absolutely imperative and crucial what you do while you're alive. It's not to say just wait it out and go to the next world. No, whether the what will be in the next world is directly proportional to what you do now. And so when someone believes that, one of my mentors was being tortured by the KGB. They took out a gun, put it to his head, and said, "This toy has made many people speak." He answered, "Perhaps someone who has many gods in one world, but someone that has two worlds and one god, it's inefficient and ineffective."
Zev, we're going to break in 15 seconds. That is very, very, very deep. I want to continue with this conversation and just share with people how you and I ourselves deal with what's going on. Thank you, Zev. Well, welcome back, folks, to this deep dive we are taking into the spiritual, political implications of the lives we're all living today with Vladimir Zev Zelenko, MD, who is really a key person in everything that is happening in the world today. He himself got messages to President Trump that led Trump initially to support hydroxychloroquine before he was shut down in doing that. And I'm going to be writing more about that. Keep track of what Ginger and I are doing, often together, almost always together, by going to Bregin.com, Bregin.com, and getting our frequent alerts. And that will tell you where you can see our latest ideas, our latest programs. I'm on the air in a lot of different ways and places, although this is our basic connection to our TV with the Mike Adams station, and it goes out through Roku around the world, real TV. And we are really glad to be centered here. Zev, this is, you know, this COVID-19 has been a real life-changing event for so many of us. I had kind of thought I was moving toward slowing things down. In fact, we moved here to live on a lake in Ithaca 20-plus years ago, thinking I was going to slow down at age 65 20 years ago. It didn't happen. We slowed down a little bit for a while, but I know that as COVID-19 approached, I was getting a little fidgety with my role as the so-called conscience of psychiatry, and didn't know exactly what was going to happen next. I actually started to look at vaccines as an issue shortly before COVID, which was like, I think, a God's nudge to get to move forward in this direction. And then when COVID-19 hit, Ginger turned to me and she said, "You know, I thought we'd sort of fade into the past, as into the future, whatever, as having done our life's work in reforming psychiatry and being proud of it." She said, "But now I think it was God's warm up for us to join with hundreds, thousands of other people standing up for freedom and God and the United States and against the globalism, the destructive evil forces of globalism." And just the last few days, and of course that's what it became, and the last few days I've been thinking, I've been granted a second lifetime. I mean, I'm 85 years old, I have my own TV station. Ginger and I are soon going to be doing through another group, we'll be doing a radio show together, which we've never done before in our lives. While we're acutely aware of the destructiveness around us, Ginger deeply feels the sadness of the world. I tend to be more in the fighting mode of just deeply want to confront the evil that's going on, and we bring our strengths together. And both of us at the ages now, 70 and 85, are really living a whole new life with whole new, amazing other human beings. And I guess I know where I'm taking this. I want to take it to the folks, to the great audience that listens to you and to me. and to others like us, and say that if you answer Zev's call, which is God's call, I actually believe that, folks. I mean, I was a Jewish agnostic in my childhood and quite progressive in my early years, I thought, way back in the 50s. But I'm not there anymore. I'm really with Zev in seeing a war here that is between everything we call goodness and God and this creation and the destructive forces that, beyond my theological understanding, often rule the ground here. But when you join in this fight, it doesn't matter what level you join on, I believe you will have a second lifetime. Maybe you'll be very young and it'll be a new renewal, a new life, new early lifetime. You will find new inspiration. Zev has found incredible strength, which we might talk about, incredible strength with severe illness, extreme assault on his identity for standing up for these basic principles. But there's a glory in it. There's a love among us who are doing this fight that is like I've never seen in my whole 60 years, really 65 years. I started being a reformer seriously at age 20, running a state mental hospital program back at Harvard, and was really involved with psychiatric reform as a college student. And I'd never had the levels of friendship that we have, the levels of love, the levels of commitment, the levels of people working together, people not being selfish and looking for some sort of false leadership or glory, but helping other people, lifting other people up, sharing and all there is to be had. And I think, Zev, you've probably been experiencing something similar to that. Let me just take a breath and hand that to you.
I'm going to share something with you that I haven't shared with anyone. And I'm going to do it on national television. But I grew up had a difficult childhood, let's put it that way. And I've learned to have a visceral allergy to injustice. When I see injustice, it ignites a rage in me that has been difficult to control over the years. And I've been able to channel that rage to accomplish a lot. If I set my mind to something, I will accomplish it. But I've paid a big price for it. It's affected my health. It's affected a lot of my most closest and intimate relationships. And it's been very difficult. Now, as I discovered, I didn't grow up religious at all. I was an atheist, actually. But as I went on this journey of self-discovery and developing a relationship with God, something became obvious what I needed to do, which was transition from of rage and plug into to love. And, you know, I preach a lot to other people, you know, you should leave Egypt and go into freedom. And by the way, it's much easier to tell other people what to do than to do it yourself. And so I myself realized that I have that Stockholm syndrome, where even though rage and anger is destroying me, has damaged me, but it's what I'm familiar with. And it's very difficult to let go. And I would say the most challenging psychodynamic act that I'm in the process of doing is to let go of the known and to plug into altruistic, baseless love and replace anger with God. And That's a constant struggle for me. But as I accomplish that, gradually, step by step, I find myself in a place of serenity and tranquility that I never thought was even possible. And that's in the midst of having what some people tell me is terminal cancer and being the tip of the spear of the worst crime in human history and all these assaults on my character and on my life, being on assassination lists and many, many other really nasty things that have been done to me in the last 2 years. But by transitioning internally what powers me from anger to love, I've realized I've become more powerful. And it's much more healthier for me also, because anger destroys. And so what I'm sharing with you is a dynamic process, a fight that I'm currently, internal fight that I'm currently in. And a lot of this has been motivated by having to deal with this unprecedented of biblical scale crisis. And the amount of carnage that I've witnessed in the last 2 years of mass murder, of evil. Just to give you one example, in March 27th, 2020, Cuomo issued an executive order blocking pharmacies from dispensing hydroxychloroquine, which I had been using to save my patients' lives. And all of a sudden it became unavailable and my patients started dying. I saw a good number of my patients that I care about die because some moron, evil ghoul signed a piece of paper in Albany. I mean, you can extrapolate that to infinity of really what's been going on. And so those things enrage me. But there is a healthier way to deal with that. And that's what I'm trying to figure out. I'm learning as I go.
You know, I was, I'm trying to think, you're quite a lot younger than me. So I'm trying to figure out at what age that I was really coming to grips with these things. But I ran into the full brunt of the evil of the establishment in early 1990s, for the second time, for the first time in the early 1970s. When I took on, in my early 30s, the brain mutilation, psychiatric lobotomy, using sometimes they used to put ice picks around the eye and tap them through the back of the brain in mental hospitals, swish around the ice pick. That was Walter Friedman style. Destroy the frontal lobes of human beings and make them extremely destroyed. You could barely communicate with their souls through the wreckage, although sometimes you could, which was pretty sad too. And the attack I came under then was enormous. I was threatened with jail by no less than the president of the American Psychiatric Association, who was a professor at Harvard in law as well as psychiatry, and said they were thinking that I was committing felonies, attacking these doctors and testifying in courts against them. And really some very heavy stuff, attacked by the Psychiatric Association, one again and again with lawyers, and very alone, not like now, Zev, where I'm not alone at all, very alone. And then when Ginger joined me, that was 1985, they went after my medical license, and we had to deal with that. The process I went through began really in my 40s. Up to that point, I was really driven by the angry young man. I was your classic angry young reformer with a lot of progressive tendencies confusing me and so on. And I realized that I would die if I kept doing what I was doing out of anger. And a friend of mine who was a psychologist said to me, you know, Peter, you somebody who's as angry as you are and working so hard to change things and make them better must really believe in love. You need to start thinking about what else you believe in beyond just being angry about what was going on. I started to think about that. I had no religious upbringing at all, Zev. I, born Jewish, but they didn't raise me Jewish, except somewhat culturally, but not very much. And I'd heard about love only once. I was in a Christian church with a Christian girlfriend when I was 16 years old. The Methodist minister talked about loving one another. And I went, what is that about? And I had a little conversation with God. It was my first one, probably very early on. He was not did not talk back. And I said to God that if he needed people to be attacked with anger, I could not be the vehicle. And that maybe he could do it or have somebody else do it, because I had to find another way of working. And it still gives me feelings in my body to remember that day and think about it. And it didn't, of course, end immediately. But after that, I began to think the measure of my success, if I didn't measure my success by me personally succeeding, then I wouldn't feel so personally angry. If I could accept that it wasn't in my hands whether an entire life's work of reform would succeed, that was going to be in God's hands. I was probably in transition between fate and God. If I just did what I thought was right, then I had succeeded. And with that change, that combination of giving up my anger to God, I think it was partly inspired by a friend of mine who took me to their AA meetings, where everybody, I learned about giving stuff up to God. And giving up not alcoholism, which I didn't have, but anger, I gave giving it up to God. And then thinking, all right, what do I do? If I have to accomplish everything in the terms of meeting evil, I would be enraged for all the time, because it's not going to happen. I'm not going to do it. It's not in my hands. So that was another big step for me, to just focus on doing what's right. And Ginger has so much similar ideas. And the way we constantly try to settle down ourselves is, okay, what's the right thing to do? We were watching one of the old Charlton Heston movies. I think it was about the Exodus, and the narrator was saying, and the Jews languished for 400 years in slavery in Egypt. And Ginger said to me, turned to me and said, God's time's really different from ours. We need to take this into consideration. And so we really struggle over just doing what we think is right, the best we can, and trying to do it out of reason and love, trying to measure, is this ultimately going to add reason and love to the world? And I see it now more clearly than I ever have, knowing people like you, well, no one else like you, quite literally, but knowing some really good people who both of us are friends with, and whom we love dearly and who love us. It has become this very unique experience that I urge people to join into, which is, get together with loving human beings who are conducting this fight. They're not angry people. Look at the truckers in Canada. They're not angry people. Look at the freedom meetings in this country. They're not angry people. Even the Donald Trump big conventions, drunk and look like he's kind of filled up with a bit of hostility at times, often playfully, often seriously. But the audiences are not angry people. They're not. Those of us who are fighting for freedom right now, this is a wonderful group to join. It's almost totally unified by God. Most of the people are very spiritual. Very similar to the founding of the nation, which came during a Christian revival, and all of the founders, they were not agnostics, they were not deists like the progressive textbooks say. They believed God was guiding what was going on in the revolution. And even Ben Franklin, who's held up as the rational man, believed that we won the war only through God's providence. And it could not have been done. George Washington repeated again and again that he knew his inadequacies, he knew that we could not win the war, that he was saved again and again by providence. So I guess the sum for me is giving up results to God, doing what we can, trying to let go of anger and loving one another. And it turns into, not easy, you and I aren't having easy times, but one, I think, very wonderful, profound times joining in this battle. As you've said, I think, too, Jeb, we're really honored to be able to stand up for freedom and God right now. And I'm going to leave you with the last 2.5 minutes. I went on for quite a while, my blessed friend.
You know, I say this every time I talk to you, but you bring out of me, you know, I let very few people into my circle of trust, but you bring out of me a certain, I feel safe to talk.
Bless you.
And I do feel your love. And I think that we are on the verge of a glorious transformation. Let me explain. It's going to get a little scientific, but so there's something called quantum information theory, which anyone who knows quantum mechanics could relate to, that the conclusion is that there's no such thing as physical reality. It appears that way, but in reality, reality is quantum bits of information. Now, I never really understood that until I oriented it in a religious framework. Because it says, Prophet says, Kulum b'chachma sisa, that God made everything with wisdom. But wisdom is information. And it says, in the future, the world will be filled with the knowledge of God, just like water covers the seas. That's also information. And so what we're really seeing is a war for the control of the narrative. You see, the enemy has taken hold of social media, mainstream media, and they have created a false narrative of fear, false narrative of depression and doom and gloom. And the reality is that if we alter that narrative, if we message the true narrative more effectively, that is the solution to the very, very problem. That reality will conform to the true narrative if we have the courage to speak about it. And so, and
15 seconds, Sam.
It works best in the grassroots perspective. Just share with everyone you know that the love works better than hate, and that we're on the cusp of a glorious revelation of God.
Thank you, Zev Zelenko.